from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Scott Hibbert, Jeannie Ives, Chris Roebling, Jan Schakowsky, and Jeff Shapiro. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, the audio and video portion of this broadcast each and every week, beyondthebeltway.com. There are just 57 days to go before Election Day. Of course, this is September 11th. And in the second hour of our broadcast this evening, we'll be talking about the lessons learned of what happened to this country 15 years ago. But there's so much contemporary politics that is happening right now. We're going to be spending the first hour discussing that. And, of course, the news that broke this afternoon, virtually every politician, certainly in New York, was at 9-11 today for the celebration, not celebration, the commemoration of the attack on the country. And Hillary Clinton was there. Donald Trump was there. And things were going along well until Hillary Clinton was whisked away and suffered what they described as a health situation. And, again, if you've not seen the video, for those who are watching on television, we're going to take a quick look at the video that happened today right outside where all the politicians were gathered. And we will take a look at that right now. And for those on radio, I'll describe what happened. She is leaning against a pillar, and her van pulls up. And just as she is walking to the car, she's surrounded on both sides, held up. She kind of steps kind of on a curb and kind of trips a little bit and then falls forward and was immediately put into the van and was whisked away. She went over to Chelsea's apartment where she rested for a couple of hours. There was no statement during that time. And it brings up the issue of her health and also Donald Trump's health. And Jan Schakowsky, you are our card-carrying Democrat this evening, vice chair of the House U.S. Caucus, a very close friend of Hillary Clinton's. Does this incident today suggest to you that the health records of both candidates is now an important matter that should be before the American people?
Well, first of all, let me just say that this issue has been raised in the most unscrupulous way by Donald Trump. And unfortunately, this incident will play into it. I'm sure he'll exploit it. I don't know if you saw those videos supposedly that were at the convention that were doctored and showed her nodding over and over and over again.
That was on a loop.
On a loop. My husband, too, has seasonal allergy, and he went to the doctor for his cough to see if he had pneumonia. He didn't. That's what she was diagnosed with on Friday. The doctor did release a letter today saying that she had been diagnosed with pneumonia on Friday and that she was dehydrated at the event, which was very, very hot. Both Chuck Schumer and Joe Crowley, my colleague from New York, put out statements about how hot it really
was. But should everybody's health record be out?
And the answer is yes. Okay. And the answer is yes.
Chris Roebling, I want to discuss with you. You are a Republican analyst for WGN, frequent guest on this program for the last 20 years. Your reaction to the video and where the video fits into the cycle that Jan has correctly identified is that right-wing conservative pundits have been suggesting that there's a health issue here, and does this give them exactly what they want?
I think the video is unsettling, and it's not just Tea Party or right-wing Republicans who think it's unsettling. We now have a column from Chris Saliza of the Washington Post saying this is going to raise the Hillary Clinton health issue. I think that what Congressman Schakowsky has said is absolutely true. If you're running for commander-in-chief, if you're running for president of the United States, you ought to be accountable for your health, and that means that your health records really need to come out. Unfortunately for Hillary Clinton, this unsettling video comes, you know, at a time when it is, I think, very well known that, you know, there are questions about her trustworthiness, right? Her veracity, her credibility. And so categorical denunciations of either the people who raise these questions or of the question itself, which I'm not accusing anybody here of doing, but just the Clinton campaign duck and cover I think, has not served Hillary Clinton well.
Scott, you know, Hibbert from Scott here. I want to get Scott's reaction from DePaul University. Scott, your reaction to the video and again, how it's likely to play out over the next several weeks.
Much ado about nothing. I think it'll be a news story for 2 days. It'll disappear. People will continue to raise the issues. But once she gets back on the campaign trail and demonstrates her tenacity, she'll be fine.
Let me ask you this question.
And by the way,
the doctor,
the information should be out there, but so should the tax records.
Okay. The doctor on Friday, this has come out in the last couple of hours because there was a 2-hour window where no one said anything. But in that 2 hours, the doctor said that on Friday she was told to rest, reduce her schedule, and was given some antibiotics. So clearly, she didn't do that, which might have led to there was a coughing incident on Monday. This is the second incident in 1 week. So does that raise an issue to you, Jeannie Ives, an Illinois state representative, Republican from Wheaton, Illinois?
Well, I might be a little contrarian here. I'll be quite honest. Maybe WikiLeaks already has the health records, and maybe they have Donald Trump's tax records, and maybe we'll find out it that way. But I am going to be contrarian. I mean, is nothing private anymore? Is literally nothing private? Don't we have HIPAA laws that say that you can't, you know, go into people's health records? And now we're going to force candidates to reveal their health history. I think, you know, the bigger of the – I tend to disagree. I tend to think that there's some things that are private. And I think tax records are, and I think health records are. And, you know, I think you should formulate your opinion based a lot on policy. I mean, and – I just, you know, did we do this back in the 19th century?
No.
I don't think so. And we had some of our best leaders there. So,
but here's my question. In a political sense, the uniqueness of this happening today, because it's 9/11, because of just so many, it's odd that it's happening today. And
what's
again,
odd? What do you mean?
I think it's odd because there now is a piece of video. It is clearly, it's not a doctored piece of alt-right video. And I've seen the video. Clearly, she's leaning against a post. And again, it was hot. It wasn't excessively hot. It was in the 80s, supposedly, today. So she was leaning. First of all, she's 68 years old. I'm 72. So, you know, maybe you're out.
Yes, and there's, you know, and I stand in formation with cadets on the fields of West Point, and they have dropped like flies,
right.
You know, under the sun with parades.
Yeah.
So, you know, why are we making much ado about this? Honestly, there's more things to attack her on, quite frankly, on policy, and I'd rather do that.
Chris.
Well, it's just another, if she is not being truthful here, as she, in my opinion, has not been truthful for an entire career, then there could be something very serious.
Wait, if she's not being truthful about what?
About her health situation. I don't believe the letter today, and I'll tell you why. On Friday, there were questions about her her coughing, and there was no statement by the campaign on Friday, the day that she was supposedly diagnosed with pneumonia. There was no statement referring in the afternoon, on Friday afternoon, late in the afternoon. There was no statement about pneumonia. They were talking only about her, you know, being tired, etc. So if she was diagnosed on Friday with pneumonia, there was an opportunity for the campaign to be straightforward and candid about that.
I want to get everybody's reaction. We do have to pause. We have somebody that's much ado about nothing, someone that thinks that health records should not come out, and we have a difference of opinion between our Republicans and Democrats. 1-800-723-8289. Where do you come down? Back shortly.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
want to back on the air, Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. The point I was making before we went to the break was that the videos that have been out there for the last several weeks, they are somewhat doctored, or they are doctored. What happened today was, I mean, there was an independent, everybody's got a cell phone now. He's got the cell phone video. And what's out there today was not doctored. I mean, the people can say that she definitely is leaning against the pillar.
Hillary Clinton was ill today. Yes, she was, and everybody knows that. Her doctor released a letter. I think that it's fine for them. But the letter
do you agree with Chris, though? It would have been better had they released it last week, because now it's after the fact.
You know,
it's before the fact.
Would it have been better if she did this or that or the other thing? Every single move. Would it have been better if Donald Trump had a letter that wasn't insane from his doctor?
That
said he will be the healthiest president ever.
Trump should release his records too. I mean,
he's
72.
He will be
he's
the 70. Oldest president ever elected, and she would be the second oldest.
So we ought to know how they're doing, and it should be straightforward. And I want to say some of the tape has been doctored, but not all of it. Just bear that in mind.
What do you think is doctored about it?
Well, I say. No, that there were loops made of some of Hillary's manifestations.
In the past.
You were saying all of it is doctored. All of it.
No,
there's some out there that is very accurate. I'm not jumping into any conspiracy theory. I'm saying
after
some has
show,
been doctored, some
show
is not.
Me that because I sure don't think so.
Yeah. Let's switch gears, because the other thing is we want Hillary Clinton and we want Donald Trump or Gary Johnson, although he may have disqualified himself this week, or Jill Stein. We want everyone to be a healthy leader of this country. And one of the most important things that a leader does is to be the commander in chief. In this past week, there was a forum on NBC hosted by Matt Lauer, and each of the candidates had a chance to step up and answer questions. What was the general impression of both candidates on that that forum, in your view, Scott?
Well, first of all, I thought Hillary was very substantive and very much of a policy wonk person. I mean, a lot of her answers got right into the meat of the policy issues in great detail, sometimes probably a little too much detail. Whereas Donald Trump really did not answer a single question. I mean, substantively, there was not a single
answer.
In his.
You know,
you're
Hillary,
a graduate of West Point.
Yes, I am. And
Captain U.S. Army.
Yes. And, you know, Hillary's big mistake for me was like, we're not going to have boots on the ground. We already have over 4,000, another 400 to 500 more going there. Are those not boots on the ground? I mean, this is a substantial mistake on her part to say that she's going to defeat ISIS without having boots on the ground. Completely false. The other thing that just my overall impression of her on the stage there was very stilted. Very stilted, very slow to answer the questions, completely running over, trying to take up time. So I don't know. But
lawyerly.
Yes. And, you know, she could not get past the first three questions were basically about her competence in terms of classified material and emails and that sort. And she did not have good answers there.
One third of the time that Matt Lauer spent with Hillary Clinton was grilling her, I felt, but bullying her about the emails. I mean, everyone pretty much agrees in reviewing it that Matt Lauer treated Hillary Clinton poorly and differently, and even in terms of trying to shut her up and say, be brief now, while Donald Trump went on and on with lies. And with unbelievable things like I was against the war in Iraq. We have video now that he was for it. And praising to the skies Vladimir Putin being stronger than the president of the United States.
He was challenged on that point. Matt did challenge
Matt Lauer did, and he doubled down, exactly.
But everybody who served in the military, she had no answers, and that audience was full of military folks.
The questions were not there. The questions weren't there.
Chris, your point. Well, and then we're going to play a clip. Go ahead.
Okay. I wasn't crazy about Lauer's job. I think that we needed more time with both candidates, frankly.
Right.
And I think that Hillary was policy wonkish. I think she knows a lot. I'll get back to that in a second. I think that Trump's if Trump's responses are an indication of how well he's being briefed for the debates, then Hillary is going to win the debates. because he's not going to be able to pull that for the debate period. The debate period is a lot longer, and it's a lot more intense, and he has to actually know something. I don't like him cozying up to Putin. That's a bad idea, just like I don't like Obama and Kerry cozying up to Putin, and that's a failed idea, and I want to get back. And this is where I get back to this whole thing about Hillary. Hillary has participated in the systematic disengagement of the United States from the global stage and the reduction, the diminution of our military ability to back up our diplomacy. Whether it's the Navy or the Army or the United States Air Force, under Obama, we have retreated from the world stage, and we're seeing the horror show that results in the Middle East, in the South China Sea, in Eastern Europe. And that was not, that point was not made by Donald Trump, nor was it defended by Hillary Clinton.
I want to play a clip. We have a clip of both candidates from the NBC forum. And first of all, I want to play the clip Hillary Clinton talking about whether or not there would be more troops in Iraq. Here's a response.
We are not putting ground troops into Iraq ever again, and we're not putting ground troops into Syria. We're going to defeat ISIS without committing American ground troops.
Just a minute. Let's let Jan respond. Jan, you opposed the war in Iraq, and during the campaign, obviously, she... Bernie Sanders asked her about that vote. She said that she sort of regretted the vote or wouldn't
That's
do it
right.
again. My question to you is it good public policy for anyone running for president to absolutely positively say what she said? Does that send a signal to enemies of the country at all?
No, I think that building international coalitions, which is what Hillary Clinton is really good at, she set the stage, I believe, for the Iran deal, which I was very much in favor of. I think that with an international coalition, that the United States does not need to be putting boots on the ground. We have our air power, we have drones, we are working with the Russians on a peace deal. At least a ceasefire in Syria right now, and planning with them the kind of air power that we will use.
Scott, yeah. showing those cards to potential enemies, is that a good idea?
Well, let me get back to the point on the boots on the ground, because in some respects the administration has made a qualification or made a distinction between special forces and combat troops that are leading the fight.
There is
no
difference.
I know, but the point is that the strategy that the Obama administration is pursuing, and that I think the Clinton administration would pursue, assuming she gets elected, is to really rely upon regional actors to provide those ground forces at the tip of the spear, if you will. Now, of course, you know, we can't get away without having people on the ground, but I think it would have been more accurate to say without a significant commitment of 100,000, 200,000 troops. That's not going to happen under her administration.
It runs athwart all military history since the Peloponnesian War to tell your adversary what you will and will not do. Okay, and that's not.
It violates one of the 11 principles of war, which in the first one is being surprise. I mean, you don't tell anybody or telegraph what you're going to do.
Oh, like Donald Trump. Well, he's not going to tell anybody his plan for defeating ISIS.
You're not looking at people who were marching down Main Street for Donald Trump in the March primary or in Illinois or in, you know, the February primary in Florida or whatever. OK, I think that Donald Trump has got a way to go. But in terms of I can criticize Trump's answers on that program if you want, but right now we're talking about Hillary. And Hillary gave a dumb response on two very important levels. A, it was factually wrong, and she's supposed to know this stuff because she was, you know, senator and all that, Secretary of State. B, it was strategically wrong because she was hobbling herself in the same way that I think Obama did when he out of his way went and said red line, and then when it came time to enforce it, he capitulated. And by capitulating, he has absolutely blown our credibility throughout the Middle East region.
Scott,
let me get back to this. So when you were talking earlier about retreating from the world stage, I think one of the things you have to realize is the 2011 withdrawal from Iraq was negotiated by the Bush administration. And one of the
that is wrong. That is a factual error, and you are absolutely wrong.
The reduction was
there was no plan. No, I've been through this all week. There was no plan ever from the Bush administration not to seek a status of forces agreement and not to have at the very least a tripwire, you know, a division of 15,000 or a couple of.
There was an effort to get a status of forces agreement.
The Obama administration went in with a determination to fail in its negotiations for a status of forces agreement.
That's inaccurate. That's
no, it's not. It is a reasonable efforts from their disastrous diplomacy.
How do you know
diplomacy.
Their plan was to fail, though?
Because they didn't try very hard. They walked away after the first two rounds.
Gene.
I just want to mention, though, the one thing that I think both candidates did not stress strong enough is the fact that we really need to rebuild our military. And I'm reading from the Wall Street Journal article, the opinion piece by Dick and Liz Cheney today. And I mean, they say our Air Force today is the oldest and smallest it has ever been. In January 2015, Army Chief of Staff General Ordinaro testified that the Army was as unready as it had been at any other time in history. The Navy, they go on to say the Navy readiness is at its lowest point in many years. I mean, that is the problem. And as a mother of two in the military, one who's an Army Ranger, the other one who's going for naval flight training, I mean, this concerns me. It should concern every American. We're only strong if we're the strongest military force out there. And neither candidate picked up on that well enough.
We got to pause. When we come back, we're going to hear what Donald Trump had to say. And there'll be people challenging and I don't know whether defending any of that. Back shortly, 1-800-723-8020. And if you watched the Commander-in-Chief Forum, what did you think? I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight live from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger. And I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back. Thank you for joining us this evening. At the forum the other evening on NBC, Donald Trump, obviously, he was on the second half of the discussion. And I think Scott said that he answered every question, or he gave response to every question. He didn't necessarily answer the question that was being asked. But again, at least according to some critics, even some critics said he might have looked presidential in the fact that he's
He answered that question on undocumented being allowed into the military.
Yes,
and that was it.
He had an answer
Iraq.
Sex abuse in the military. He came out for courts. Sex abuse courts in the military.
Which already exists.
That already exists.
I understand. He wants that.
You know what he has said before.
And his tweet was saying that the problem was the women in the military. The one problem I really had with the...
That's not accurate. I don't know which tweet you're talking about. He's got a variety of tweets.
The tweet was... That's because the geniuses that made the decision to have men and women together in the military.
Yeah. He did talk about that. You don't make points.
The issue that I was really concerned about was Iraq. On the one hand, it's how are you going to defeat ISIS? He says, well, I've got a plan, and the plan is to get the generals together and to come up with a plan. But then as a throwaway line, he made this comment about, we should have kept taken the oil when we left Iraq. And to me, it was shocking on any number of levels. I mean, on the one hand, it's immoral and illegal. But aside from that, because part of the argument was, that way we would have deprived the oil from ISIS. But if you know anything about Iraq, the oil's up in the Kurdish regions in the north or the Shia regions in the south. I mean, there's really no oil in the Sunni regions in the west. I mean, there are in Syria, but that's not where our troops are.
But Scott, you know that, and your colleagues your colleagues in academia know that.
No,
but here's my point. Does that sound good? Does that sound good?
Yes.
That's exactly right.
To people
right.
out there
that's
who
exactly
are going
right.
to vote. And their vote counts just as much as yours.
But somebody but that's, who, that's, if somebody wait, who is making Scott. A pitch to be yep. commander right. of the free world,
right.
commander-in-chief, so he should know this.
I think that Bruce is really onto something. It's really about tone. And rhetoric. It's
over
not,
substance.
Yeah, it is.
And that should be troubling.
Well,
that should be troubling.
Who among us is not troubled,
Scott? Who among us is not troubled?
My point is, though, troubled. That he comes off. She could not get past the stilted conversation over her emails in the beginning of the entire interview, yeah. and that is sticking with
and
people.
And she hurt herself
and
in that
she
area.
She really did. So I think it's really about people are just dismissing that. They're just dismissing that. They're going. I mean, we know personality is what kind of.
I want to ask one question, Jan. Once upon a time, you were on the. A U.S. House Intelligence Committee for a number of years. People are term limited off on it. You're not on for a long time. But you were on for several years.
Yes.
So I assume that you were privy to top secret briefings.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up because...
You're a very smart woman. Was it confusing to you? Did you know what you were looking at was
these
things
are
identified?
Professional people... make these briefings to members of Congress, and I'm certain to candidates for President of the United States. Mm-hmm. And for Donald Trump to say he could tell because of the body language that they really disapproved of what the President Obama was doing is totally inappropriate, and I am certain not true. These individuals are so, and he said they were very high ranking. That just doesn't happen. Yeah. It doesn't happen. Yeah.
Here's something else that was said. This was said by Donald Trump. He's been talking about the need to build up the military, and this is what he had to say about some generals. Let's listen.
I think under the leadership of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, the generals have been reduced to rubble. They have been reduced to a point where it's embarrassing for our country.
Generals reduced to rubble. Jeannie, I want to ask you, how does that play to the generals and the colonels and the captains in the U.S. military? Do they agree with Donald Trump, or do they think that he is dismissive in throwing generals under the bus?
You know, I think that if you're a general, you're fairly comfortable in your skin and who you are and what you stand for. And I think to generals' credit, they understand that they serve at the needs of a civilian president, right? We have civilian control of our military. And so they try desperately to be apolitical. That said, they do hold core beliefs. Now, with two kids in the military, a number of friends in the military, I can tell you that a number of people are very dissatisfied, completely dissatisfied with how Obama's administration has run the military. In fact, it's run it into the ground. I just gave you some statistics later. They're very concerned about the course that we are on in terms of that. So,
when Donald Trump suggests that he's going to get rid of some generals, you just can't get rid of generals, can you?
Well, you can, actually.
Yeah.
And actually, Obama has done that as
unified
well.
Unified and specified
he
command
has gotten,
generals.
He can get rid of them. He can, he's going to appoint a different probably chief of staff of the Army and everything else. So the president has the ability to do that and to move people around.
Is that good for America? For a candidate for president to say
a general picks its own his own staff as well. So the generals do this internally as well. They understand.
I'm just saying, for him to say that.
I think it is, Jan, I think it is very important because it buttresses one of his, I think, core points, and that is political correctness has overtaken the American government under Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and all we are going to see if Hillary Clinton returns is going to be more of it. And I think the point that he was making is the generals have been made subservient to political correctness. And so whether
I will tell you definitively that has happened.
And there's no question that there are 125 admirals and generals, God bless every one of them, who will sign a thing saying I'm for Hillary. And there are going to be 125 who sign a thing saying I'm for Trump. And I think that all kind of balances it out. But the real issue here is, are we running a military and a foreign policy that is advancing the cause of freedom and liberty and America's interests and those of our allies?
When it comes to the military budget, The Department of Defense actually has, on many occasions, several occasions while I've been there for a lot of years, said we do not need to spend money here.
Right.
We don't want to spend money
right.
here. And the Republicans in Congress have continually jacked up those dollars.
You know, there are a lot of Democrats who have as well. I served as a staffer for Congress people on the Appropriations Committee, and I certainly saw it day in and day out. And that's why we came up with a BRAC structure, which took 123 years to come up with a BRAC structure with a base reallocation and closing. Yeah. And just for the listeners at home, it's a relatively nonpartisan way to come up with ideas to save money by closing bases.
Two quick points.
The military budget is still about $680 billion, which is twice what it was when the Clinton administration left. So there's still a lot of money in the pipeline. I would argue that what's really been shortchanged is the State Department budget and USAID. There are more ways to promote the freedom agenda and to try to make improvements overseas than just the military. We really need to beef up these other elements.
I got to go back to this thing that you said about oil, because you are wrong on this oil thing, and I'll tell you why. Not with the geography of North and South. I don't disagree with that. But one of the key elements that made ISIS viable in its early stages was when
oil fields in Syria.
When it took the oil fields in Syria. And there was a decision made by the Obama administration, entirely wrong, in my opinion. I don't know about Jeannie, but maybe some Republican. I don't know that it was partisan. But the Obama administration documents indicate that they decided not to take out that oil refinery that was providing $2 million and up to $3 million a day at the highest oil prices to ISIS. Because of environmental concerns, okay? Because of environmental concerns. And that is, to me, a very clear step in favor of ISIS and at the expense of our allies.
But they were pursuing other policies to shut down the oil pipeline.
I don't deny that they were pursuing, but the truth is, Scott, they went slow on the international financial sanctions. Well, they went slow on a lot of things that they could do to inhibit ISIS.
I want to switch gears.
So you were wrong about that.
I'm totally right.
I want to switch gears and talk about Donald Trump's ongoing effusive comments about Vladimir Putin.
Awful.
And the role that Russia is or is not playing in this campaign. Do you think they're playing an active role in this campaign, Jan?
Well, there does seem to be evidence, even though he dismissed it out of hand at the at that debate or whatever you call that forum, that they have – he invited them, actually, to hack into our emails.
I think he said he wanted them to release Hillary's emails if they had them, which is a little bit different. But go ahead.
Okay. So there is considerable evidence that the Russians have been hacking into our emails. Yes.
And the question is, by saying things that he's saying about Vladimir Putin, why are they terrible?
Well, if you're a Pole or if you're a member of NATO or you're in the government in Ukraine, you should be really concerned that he's going to sell you out the minute he gets into power.
Okay,
we have different interests in the Russians in Eastern Europe and in Syria. And that's why our relationship with the Russian government has gone south.
That's interesting, though. So when Donald Trump got up there and said, look, I think I'm going to have a very good relationship with Russia and very good relationship with Putin. So I read into that a little differently. I read into that as saying he's going to be able to handle that man one-on-one professionally and not be duped, not be whispering in the ear, just wait till after the election. Okay, so, that's what I see. That's how I read into it. He didn't say, I like the guy a lot. I think he's doing great things in the world. He didn't come out and say that.
No,
he didn't. He said, I'm going to have a good relationship with him. Now, that relationship can be one from strength. And that's what I'm hoping that comes out of here. So I think people are misreading
argument is in earlier comments, he talked about the continued utility of NATO and whether or not we need NATO anymore.
Yes.
That is an absolute. You know, Scott, you are not hewing to the facts. Hold on a second. What he said was, I am going to force NATO members to live up to their commitments under the NATO treaty for the 2% of GDP spent on their own defense as part of the NATO
alliance.
Scott's
response when we come back, 1-800-723-8029.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit
that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. One of the things, obviously, that by Donald Trump's utterances, he makes it easy for the opposition to say he's a wild card. They don't know where he's coming from. Hillary Clinton, obviously, in all of her commercials, is using that to basically create a scare, a fear factor about Donald Trump, much as what was done in 1964 against Barry Goldwater. But my question to you is, we have something that Hillary said the other evening, and that is she's not absolutely never sending troops to Syria, never sending troops, and was very absolute about that. Now, the flip side of that is this wild cannon or wild card, Donald Trump. If you're an enemy of the United States, Jeannie, who would you fear more?
I would fear Donald Trump, actually. Is that good
or bad for us?
No, I think that our enemies should picture us as something to be feared and someone to be feared of. So I think that they should understand that I think he's going to reorganize the priorities of the military. I think he's going to bring in a new strategy. And I think that they should they are afraid. They know what they're going to get with Hillary Clinton. They've seen that result.
I want to get Jan's response to that. Same question. To our enemies, is it better for the president of the United States to be viewed as a steady hand
Absolutely.
With a track record or a wild cannon?
Absolutely. I think our allies and our enemies
both
think that Donald Trump is not qualified to be the world leader of the world power, and that this kind of unpredictability, which he said is going to be a hallmark of what he does, is certainly not the way to build the kind of world that we need.
Let's speak about the enemies. Do you think an enemy would be more or less likely to challenge the United States if Donald Trump was the president?
He has said, let's just bomb the out of them.
Right.
And that kind of language, the idea of a Donald Trump with his thumb on the nuclear button, I think, yes, enemies ought to be afraid, but certainly allies, Americans and our allies ought to be worried as well.
So it depends on who you're talking to. The Russians actually do see Hillary as very provocative and actually wanting war and wanting to expand NATO up into their doorstep, based upon the Obama policy and based upon the Clinton policy. Now, it's going back to our earlier exchange. One of the reasons why they feel more comfortable with Trump is that many of his comments he's made earlier seems to belie more sphere of influence, traditional balance of power approach to international politics. And so from their perspective, they see him as, because of his comments he's made about NATO, and about the utility of the alliance system and of the whether or not people are actually pulling their weight within the alliances, they see him as potentially willing to compromise on Eastern Europe in a way that would suit their interest.
I think this is completely wrong. I think that
it's not, Chris. Go on, give me your feedback.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the show too here.
That's why we have a difference of opinion.
Okay,
here.
Good.
That's why we have this show.
First of all, I want to say that I do not think that Hillary Clinton is anti-American. I don't question her patriotism. And as a guy who grew up as a Democrat and really admiring people like Hubert Humphrey and Scoop Jackson, I believe that Hillary – sometimes I believe she's the last reasonable Democrat left. Okay, so I really truly believe that. So I want to say that about Hillary before I say she's also a lot like these generals. I believe that she is much more, not to say adventurous, but I think that she is much more active in her foreign policy, and she sees a role that America can play. And I think she was advocating for that inside the Obama administration and was always undercut by Valerie Jarrett and Barack Obama. So I think that I'm taking Hillary out of what I'm about to say. Barack Obama, I believe, ran in 2008 saying, I will have meetings with our adversaries, with our enemies, without preconditions. And the Democrats said it's the greatest thing in the world because George Bush is a goat,
right,
and we need somebody who can sit down with the Ayatollahs or whoever. And I believe that what Trump is saying now is the Republican kind of version of that about Putin. And you come back to what is
putting North Korea.
Right. And look at the great success that Madeleine Albright and Bill Clinton had in preventing North Korea from getting the nuclear weapons. That's exactly where we're headed with Iran.
That's fine.
Iran.
You can't make these decisions, or you can't do this in the current state that we are in. So when Barack Obama took over in 2009, it's a lot different now in 2016,
yeah,
right? And the military, the chaos throughout the universe, the alliances that have been formed, the Russian aggression, it is not the same thing. So if I want a president who is feared by the enemy,
absolutely,
that's right now. That's what I want. This is not the Cold War period,
right?
But, you know, it's a lot different environment. And at this point, we need pushback because we've had too much of a softening of our policy. So they need to be afraid of what we're going to do. They need to be afraid of other cyber attacks against them.
We have,
so and it's completely unbalanced now. We're not at balance.
I've got
to
say this.
Why they
We have two different, two different strategic environments, as I think Jeannie is leading to. The one is that in which mutual assured destruction and the awareness of our ability to retaliate and our physical ability to retaliate, which under Barack Obama has gone down and down and down. That is still very significant relative to the rational actors out there. So that's important to China. It is important to Russia. But what we have now, and they have been strengthened by Obama, are the irrational actors who are not convinced about mutual assured destruction.
Jan.
You know, I really don't understand what you're saying. The willingness of the president, for example, to actually sit down with the Iranians has not a perfect deal, but has certainly made the possibility of Iran having a nuclear weapon right now impossible. And that kind of ability to bring the world together to negotiate those kinds of agreements is a really positive thing.
I don't deny it. And to me, the guy who did that best was Ronald Reagan, followed by George Bush. And if you go back to Reykjavik and the steps that he took to stand up to the Soviet Union showed that the dance of diplomacy is very, very challenging.
And bringing Russia and China to the table.
But the truth, I believe, Jan, is that Russia and China...
We're out of time. 1-800-723-8029. We have another full hour coming up. A lot of things. And in the next hour, we're going to have the adorables and the deplorables, and we're going to be seeing which group you fall into. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Saturdays at 4:30 and Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Dumont back. We continue on WIND Radio and all of our radio stations all over the country, including WCGO and the POTUS 124. And we have callers on the line. Let's go to Mark listening to us on KUFO in Portland, Oregon. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes. Hi there, folks. I just had a comment on, the argument on who's a better leader, Obama or Putin. Mm-hmm. I just had a different perspective that I haven't heard bat around. I'm thinking that Putin, as a communist dictator in a communist country, is a better leader than our Obama with his ideologies in our democratic republic.
Well, that's the difference. That is the difference between a communist form of government where there is the strong man leader and a democracy.
Nominally, they're not communist anymore. I just want to point that out. Well, the CPSU is disbanded.
But it just seems to me that Putin is indeed a better leader. I'm not saying he's a good leader. I'm just saying he's a better leader in his type of country than Obama and his ideologies here in our country.
Mark, let me ask you a question about something that has gotten quite a bit of currency in recent weeks, and that is whether or not the Russians are actively engaged in hacking the United States, hacking the DNC, and also trying now to somehow manipulate our elections. Does that worry you?
It does, and I think everybody's hacking everyone.
Which is true.
I'm kind of disappointed that the world is putting all of their electronic eggs in one giant electronic basket. I'd kind of like to see us go back to the old-fashioned ways, where somebody would have to physically break into a building, grab files physically, and then
like the good old days, the Nixon era. The Nixon era. Mark, we're going to move on. We've got somebody else calling. Go ahead.
Because the interesting word there is leader. Because basically, Vladimir Putin's done very well because he's been able to lock up his opposition and control the press and, basically use
kill
the media.
People.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, at the end of the day, I mean, he has not done much for the economy. It's still reliant on fossil fuels. In the long run, it's not going to serve the system well. It's not going to serve the people well. And maybe he may have majority support if he runs for re-election next year. He may get re-elected, but it's not necessarily good for the country.
Elected with no opposition.
Exactly. Yeah, rigged system. So.
Yeah, the average Russian is resigned to Putin. Right. They are not enthusiastic about Putin. They are resigned to Putin as an expression of central authority.
Speaking of those who are very excited and very enthused, Hillary Clinton was addressing a very enthusiastic crowd Friday night in New York City. They were all her friends, all of her fans, and she's decided that she was going to get into political analysis and describe those that are making up the constituency of Donald Trump. Let's listen to what Hillary had to say, and then we're going to discuss it because it's created quite a bit of controversy.
To just be grossly generalistic, you could put half of Trump supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it.
Right. Had it not been for Hillary's health situation this afternoon, that story probably would be having legs for two or three more days. How offended were you by those comments? And where do you put yourself? You're a reluctant Trump supporter. We have two Republicans tonight. You are reluctant Trump supporters.
Sure.
But again, where do you fit into the description?
Well,
that Hillary
I guess
offered?
To be offended, you'd have to care about what she says, you know. And I don't really care what she says too much. But I'll tell you what, I think this is her 47% moment. I think this is her mockery of people who have come out in droves in millions to support Donald Trump and voted him in as the Republican candidate. And I think I think that she's just had her Romney moment. Mm-hmm. It actually speaks to her as the political class, the status quo. I'm above everybody else. These people are deplorable. And it absolutely, I think she's going to suffer for this. Just like her emails, it's not going away.
Jen Schakowsky.
Hillary apologized for that as an exaggeration. But has Donald Trump ever apologized about what he says about Mexicans? What he says about women? About banning Muslims from coming into this country. Group after group after group, he has demonized in the most extraordinary ways. And I just feel like Donald Trump has never, he's doubled down on those kinds of things.
I think there's
let me follow up. First of all, this is what Hillary Clinton said, but she didn't apologize, but she said this was issued Saturday. Last night I was grossly generalistic, and that's never a good idea. I regret having saying half. That was wrong. Now, some of her fans might say maybe it's a lot more than half. But my question to you is, Donald Trump has insulted a lot of groups, and all of those groups have banded together, and they're now vehemently against Donald Trump. In this particular case, has Hillary Clinton described another group, the group that Ginny is just talking about? And they're only going to get their back up, and there may be people in that group that are not – They're not the alt-right. They're not the racist. They're not the anti-homophobics. They may be just Republicans. And they're now being thrown into the same group.
Look, more than half of Trump supporters do think that immigrants, all illegal immigrants, should be deported from this country. He has deliberately appealed to the racism of Americans. Can that be denied?
But Jan, I don't know. You're not going to use Trump as your standard for Hillary. I mean, goes right into the that flies in the face. And I want to say the thing that was most disturbing to me was the final line in that particular paragraph. But thankfully, they're not America. And I think that's basically saying they're not Americans. I think that this is an expression of the elitism, the arrogance, the condescension, and the ability
of... I think it means that Donald Trump doesn't represent the values of the United States of America.
Yeah, she's attacking his voters.
You just said that Donald Trump doesn't, you know, he doesn't represent the values of millions of people. Millions of people. There's a nuance here that I think nobody's picking up on. Now, Hillary's making this comment about, in general, Americans. Donald Trump's making some of his comments, particularly those about people coming in from Muslim countries, people coming in that are here illegally. He's making those
women.
Comments. Okay, yes. Women, yes, but he surrounds himself by lots of women. But regardless, I mean, he's making these comments as a reaction to political correctness. And so there's a difference here in how the tone is set, I think, when people are processing it, in my opinion. Sure, she was directly attacking American voters. Trump is making comments about people that where he feels the system, they have gamed the system, and the Americans feel that same way. That's why they put him as the Republican nominee. They feel like the system's been gamed against them. That's my interpretation.
When we come back, I want to get your reaction, Scott. We also have callers on the line, and we want to pick up on this discussion, whether or not you consider whether you are a deplorable. Are you a part of the basket of deplorables? Back shortly from Chicago.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Back in Chicago, you wanted to make a quick point, Scott, and then we're going to call.
Well, just, you know, I mean, quite frankly, it's an unfortunate comment. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. But, you know, Jan's right. You know, Trump has really debased discourse in this election by demonizing pretty much everybody. It's just it bothers me to see the other candidate, Hillary Clinton, you know, kind of stoop to that level. And one can see this happening in a political campaign. I find it.
And when other candidates did it in the primary, Trump handed them the lunch. It didn't help anybody.
It bothered me then too.
Oh yeah, it knocked Rubio off his mark. Let's go to Jerry listening to us on KUFO, and he's listening. Are you listening on POTUS or are you listening on KUFO, Jerry? Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I remember earlier in the campaign when they were escorting I think it was a black man out of a Trump rally, and an older gentleman with a ponytail punched him.
Yes.
And Trump later on said that he would pay for the lawsuit of the guy that punched him or something like that. Uh-huh. I don't have all the facts completely right.
Uh-huh. Right.
But anyways, and with Hillary saying that Trump supporters are deplorable, she walked that back again. I think she realized that that was a mistake. It was the wrong thing. And I don't think she believes that. And that was my comment.
Okay. We appreciate your call. Let's go to Harold Knutson. You're on the air. Go ahead. Calling from Chicago, I believe. Go ahead.
Yes, Arlington Heights. Yes, I'd like to respond to the congresswoman's charge that someone who is, for example, against illegal immigration, that is not the American values. I beg to differ with that. I'm the son of immigrants. My parents came here legally in the 1950s, and they were very much believers that the American way is that you do things by the law, you protect the Constitution, and you live to the spirit of that, and that breaking the law, jumping the border, that is a disqualifier, that yes, you do need to go back whence you came and get in line and come over legally. So I think that is very much the normal American values and something that does not make a person deplorable, but puts them in the right.
All right, let's let Jan respond.
That's my comment.
We certainly need to have laws. I was referring to the demeaning way that Donald Trump talks about immigrants who have come here to make a better life. Throughout our history, we have had periods where we have changed the rules for people who have come and obeyed the law, who have worked hard, who have tried hard to raise their families and their children and be part of this culture.
Where do we change the laws?
We've had in 86, we've had a number of times when, even under the Reagan administration, when we've allowed immigrants who have come here in the past illegally to stay.
But we also never enforced the law. That wasn't quite what the immigration law was passed, but it wasn't enforced by anybody, and that's why we're now at this problem again.
I guess it's that somehow these people are diminishing the United States of America, and all of them, 11-12 million, ought to be deported from the United States.
In the latest incarnation, when he gave a speech in Phoenix the same day that he went to visit the Mexican president, he said that the focus would be on criminal aliens.
He said everyone had to go back home and then come back to the United States legally.
But in that speech, he
also said there would be a prioritization.
Yes.
And the prioritization, in terms of government action, the government
which is what we have now.
To some extent, but there is great popular acclaim that it's not to a great enough extent. Okay, and that's why Trump is doing so well.
Barack Obama has deported more people than any other president.
There are many people who have.
He needs to do more.
Let's just talk about Trump's. Trump, to get this out, he said we're going to focus on the guys who and ladies who have convictions for violent crime, and then we're going to go back from that. And he said, in addition to that, if you are here illegally and you want to be here legally, you're going to have to go back and you're going to have to get in line behind the people in your home country who are participating legally. Those are the two things that he said.
Look, even the Secretary of Homeland Security this morning, Jay Johnson, basically said having a porous border is a problem for our national security.
Of course
and
it is.
He even admits, look, we do have people from other countries, not just south of our southern border. We have people coming in from Africa and, China and everything from the Middle East coming through our southern border. So he even admitted that's a security risk that we can't have.
Part of it, too, is corporate America can't hire people fast enough. I mean, there's not a restaurant or hotel in this city or any major city that doesn't rely heavily upon cheap labor.
This is where the Democrat ideology has hurt the American worker.
Absolutely.
Okay? And the Democrat ideology, I think, Jen, no surprise to you, I believe this is entirely about creating new voters for the Democratic Party. This has nothing to do whatsoever. The idea that we would institutionalize illegal behavior to the detriment of the ordered immigration that all of us as Americans, all of us,
border patrol people than we've ever had before,
and
on the southern border, we have deported more people. Maybe we can fix the system, but in the meantime, I'm first generation. My parents were not born here. Has reinvigorated the United States of America.
Let me ask you this question.
You are a lawmaker. You've been a lawmaker for much of your life in Springfield as well as Washington, D.C. You write laws. When you write laws, you want governments and municipalities to enforce them. How do you feel about sanctuary cities who determine which laws they will enforce or not?
And that's why we have a broken immigration system. We're all going to agree with that, I believe. And that's why we need comprehensive immigration reform to set what those laws account for the contributions
But would you support a bill that stops all federal funding to a sanctuary city violates the immigration law?
The city of Chicago says it will not use its police department to enforce immigration law. And you know what? It makes our city safer. Because if you are an immigrant, are you going to call the police when somebody is robbing something or pulling out a gun to you? Probably not.
Tell it to the
probably not.
I don't know why I want to talk about safety in Chicago.
Yeah, tell it to the families of the people who have been killed or injured by illegal aliens who have participated in violent crime on the streets of the United States.
This cuts both ways. People are the priority right now, which is what Donald Trump said he wants to do.
Jan, the truth is, I believe, across the board, there's very low credibility on behalf of the federal government about enforcing the acres of American code, federal code that you guys in Congress have already written. Well, and if we can't agree on
to change the laws at all.
No, I think what Republicans have said generally is step one is enforce the laws with respect to the border.
I want to go to Diane in Niles, Michigan. Go ahead, Diane. I think you've got an interesting point. Go ahead.
My question is, does anyone know what it costs to become a legal immigrant? My brother lived in California, and when I was out there, I talked to a legal immigrant, and he said the biggest problem is the cost. It cost about $25,000, American dollars, to become a legal immigrant. Is it a business, or are we really trying to help people become legals?
The reality in that is since Senator Kennedy's revisions to our immigration law in the late 1960s, we have admitted consistently more and more people with less and less education and less net financial capability. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now that is not to say that we've been admitting bad people. Nobody's saying that. I'm just saying the result, the demonstrable, empirically verifiable result of Senator Kennedy's changes and reforms then, the 1960s version of our immigration reform was to start introducing more people at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum into the United States. So I think that the Miss Diane in Niles, Michigan, thank you for your call. But I don't think that we have created an undue barrier to people coming in legally.
Scott, go back to my original point. Unless you go after the employers who hire them.
Right.
You're not going to solve the problem.
The Republicans support E-Verify, and the Democrats oppose it.
Well, the Speaker doesn't.
But the Speaker doesn't.
500,000 overstayed their visas in 2015. Overstayed their visas, so they came here legally and they just stayed.
But the Speaker doesn't support that. Paul Ryan doesn't support that.
You cannot be an illegal immigrant and buy your way to citizenship, which is what the question was. But it is true that if you are of legal immigrant status, the cost to become a citizen of the United States is very great. You have to come up with a lot of money in order to be able to do it. And I think that's a mistake. I think we want people who have legal status here, who are contributing, who are working, to be able to afford to become citizens. And that's one thing we should change.
If they arrived here legally, I would agree.
Legal.
But you can't buy your way to legal status, but I'm talking about refugees are different. They're a different classification of immigrants. I do completely understand that. I live in Wheaton, the home of World Relief. We have a ton of refugees in our system. I can't tell you how many times they are very costly into our education system. After the federal government leaves after 90 days, they become a product of the community to have to support them, and it's very costly.
We have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to talk about 9/11. 15 years later.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Before we get back to tonight's discussion, I want to take just a moment of personal privilege to share with those who are listening and watching in the city of Chicago and those around the country. Chicago lost a great political analyst yesterday, Paul Green, who is the chairman of the City Club of Chicago, a longtime member of the faculty at Roosevelt University, a man who frequently was on WGN Radio as their political analyst, a man about town with politics, and not only did he have the intellect and the ability and the great history when he offered his analysis, but he had a great sense of humor. And he was a close friend of many people who are listening to this program this evening, and I know really one of the very closest friends of Chris Roebling, who joins us tonight, who's the treasurer of the City Club. And I know you want to make a comment about the loss of your good friend, and our condolences to you.
Thank you very much, Bruce. I think I'm blessed because I knew Paul as long as I did, and I can say that he was a very unique guy in many, many respects, but I'll name one because it has a bearing on our conversation tonight. You know, his PhD was from the University of Chicago, so academically he was very highly qualified and very finely trained, and he was one of these guys who absolutely mastered library research, and he could run regression analyses, and he was really sort of the last word on Illinois voting patterns, and that was a particular area of expertise for him. But in addition to that, he got outside of the library, got outside the quadrangle, outside the classroom, and he went out into the neighborhoods, and he would meet with people, whether they were a precinct committeeman in DuPage County or a ward committeeman in Cook County. He listened, and he was able to take the learning that came from those interactions with people on the street corner, so to speak, knocking on the doorstep, listening to the voters. He could illuminate that with his library research, and then the research that he published had a great liveliness because of his connection to the folks who were actually out practicing politics.
Real world.
And nothing more important to him, I think, than a reasoned, civil, and respectful conversation like the one that your program has had all these years and the one in which we're engaged tonight.
And Jan, he was a longtime friend of yours as well.
Well, I knew him for a long time. He was certainly an important person on the political scene and talking about politics. And the thing that I really appreciated about him is that he was not cynical in any way about politics. He respected the process. Oh, sure, things could be different, but he respected the process and he respected the people who run for office, and presented that in a way that I think he elevated politics, in my view.
Yeah. He was a terrific guy, a tremendous loss to people that love politics. And also our condolences to his wife, Sharon, and family. So we wish him well. Rest in peace, Paul. On that somber note, I'd like to also talk about that today is the 15th anniversary of a day that we will never forget. And my question to you, I'll start with you, Scott. What is the significant lesson that this country has learned in the last 15 years?
I'm not sure it's learned it. I mean, on the one hand, I think America is safer today than it was in years gone by, certainly 15 years ago. You're not going to see another – it's highly unlikely you'll see another kind of major attack on American soil. But the real lesson that I think we failed to learn is how to deal with Islamist militancy. I mean, we've invaded countries. We're taking a very militarized approach. And, you know, the problem's only gotten worse, not better. It's continued to metastasize. And in my mind, you know, that part of the problem is we failed to diagnose the problem. We look at it largely in terms of military terms. We don't look at the sources from which extremism arises, whether it's, you know, socioeconomic dysfunction, growing populations, authoritarian rule. I really wish the Bush administration had taken the freedom agenda more seriously. Because that was kind of left on the cutting room floor, if you will.
Jeannie Ives, your response of 15 years later.
I think we've kind of got a generation that doesn't understand exactly what happened. So kids that are 5, you know, are now 20. They didn't really understand it then. Parents were it's 15 years hence, and we're such a fast-paced society, and we move on from one thing to another. And when you have less than 1% serve in the military or have any idea about what's going on and what it takes to serve, I think that they're just people are going about their daily lives and not really paying attention. I noticed even today in church that we didn't sing, like, America the Beautiful as the closing song, or we didn't do anything that was patriotic. And I honestly thought that we would have on 9/11 anniversary, because there were numerous religious services at many churches throughout when this did take place, especially in Wheaton. I mean, that's where Todd Beamer went to college, in Wheaton, and I was a little bit shocked. So I
Todd
think
Beamer was a hero in the
Flight 93 issue. So I am concerned that we're forgetting and not remembering what it takes to take care of this threat.
Jen Schakowsky, you were in Congress on that day 15 years ago. I don't know how many of your colleagues today were there or remember it, but what is your recollection of that day and how it affected you?
It took a little while for it to sink in, even after we saw the second tower being hit. And then seeing the smoke from the Pentagon, we could actually see it out of my office window. And then this wild sort of evacuation of the Capitol, very disorganized, very panicked, people dispersing. It was very chaotic. But let me say one other thing. That Saturday, that weekend, I called for a solidarity march down Devon Avenue, Chicago, which many people know is a very diverse community, a lot of South Asians, a lot of Muslim residents. Yeah. And it was multi-religion. Multicultural. That's what I'm trying to say. And people from the Jewish Federation and all kinds of Christian organizations walking together, carrying American flags to say, we will not be divided. We will not give in to Islamophobia. And where are we today? Where are we today, where Islamophobia has become a centerpiece of a political campaign here in this country, where women are afraid to go out with a hijab, with a head covering, send their children to school, where people talk about banning them from this country? That's a big disappointment to me, that we couldn't come together.
Chris Roebling, your reaction.
I don't think we've learned enough about Islam. I think we have much more to learn about Islam. I think that we come from a Judeo-Christian tradition, and I think that Islam has for centuries been other. Okay, and I think that we have a lot to learn about the difference between what we would refer to as sort of mainline Shia Islam or mainline Sunni Islam and fundamental Shia and Sunni Islam. One of the great authorities, Martin Marty, a professor at the University of Chicago, and years before 9/11, he published a three-volume opus called Fundamentalisms Observed, which is not – I haven't read all three volumes. I've just paged through it, but it is a stunning and massive magisterial achievement. I'm very proud of my son, who is going to college in the Middle East, and he's learning more about this, because I disagree – with Scott. It's not a socioeconomic issue. There are elements within Islam about which we need to know considerably more than we do. And that's on the good side in terms of our potential allies, and it's also on the very troubling, very adversarial side.
Okay. Jeannie,
so here's why we have not learned enough about Islam, and why you can't just say that we are a multicultural society and you're upset that we're not more open about Islam and all that. Here's why. Because there's on average 5 terrorist attacks per day worldwide when you look at it. In 2014, BBC analyzed just how many attacks, 664 attacks, over 5,000 deaths. And when you think about it, we haven't learned anything. When you have Chattanooga killings, you've got the San Bernardino, you've got the Orlando, you've got the Boston bombing, you've got Charlie Hebdo, the Paris bombing, Belgium bombing. I mean, it's just going on and on. Not to mention the individual beheadings that are done by ISIS, drowning people alive, putting them in fire
pits.
It absolutely, this is a terror attack. They are still controlling their population with terror. Their civilian population. That's the problem, and we got to arrest it.
Scott.
So First off, it was Martin Marty and Scott Appleby.
Yes, and Scott. I apologize for not mentioning Scott Appleby.
And it's a foundational text. I read them when I was in grad school. You're right. We don't know enough about Islam. And just to be clear, I'm not saying it's just a socioeconomic issue.
But your presentation is part of the problem.
Chris, come on.
You have to hear this. Your presentation to not include reference to the bastardization or the fundamentalism, by not including that in your original statement, you are actually prolonging the ignorance.
I would differ. When I teach courses on this material, and when I go through it, I make clear that my students recognize it's a multifaceted phenomenon. There's a military component to it. There's an ideological component to it. There's a socioeconomic component to it. There's a demographic component to it. A lot of the instances...
Where's religion?
Ideological and religion. It's totally intertwined.
Ideology is not religion. Ideology has to do with the public.
But the Islamist narrative comes out... the Islamist ideology emerges out of a religious narrative. Now, 2 points. One is, one of the challenges is that the Sunni fundamentalism that informs the ideology... is a key part of Saudi Arabia's ruling family. It's promoted by the Pakistani intelligence services. A lot of our key allies rely upon this very limited or narrow interpretation of the tradition. When I was doing doctoral research in Egypt, the thing that really struck me was in the 50s and 60s, Islam was very progressive. It's not like that today.
We have to pause. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's happening politically in the state of Virginia. But before that, when we come back, we will have a caller who is at the 9/11 ceremony today in New York City. We'll hear from him then.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Well, tonight we have quite a august panel. We have a member of Congress. We have a college professor. We have a state representative, also U.S. Army captain from West Point, and we have a political analyst for WGN. So we're covering all of our bases. And the one thing we don't have is we don't have somebody joining us on Skype, but we now do. And he is Jeff Shapiro. He's a political columnist for the Richmond Times-Dispatch in the great state of Virginia. And we've reached out from every week. As you know, we reach out to a battleground state to find out what's happening politically there. And I guess my first question to you, Jeff, is, once upon a time, Virginia was considered a battleground state. Do you still consider it a battleground, or does Hillary have it wrapped up?
This is good evening, from Richmond. Thank you for having me. If the polls are to believe, and certainly they are interesting curiosities, if I may put it that way, Mrs. Clinton appears to have locked down the state fairly early in the cycle. There are a number of indications of that. She has no intention, at least at this juncture, of advertising on television in the Virginia markets in September and October. And her allied super PAC has also gone dark in Virginia. Another, I think, telling measure of the campaign's confidence that Virginia will remain blue this cycle. Mm-hmm. Very little, traffic by the marquee names. And that includes Tim Kaine, the former Virginia governor, former Richmond mayor. He did make an appearance in the southeastern part of the state on Friday and showed up Saturday afternoon in his adoptive hometown of Richmond.
Jeff, is that what adding Tim Kaine to the ticket, is that what pushed the state into the Democratic column?
I don't know that it was a Kaine alone. There's a lot going on demographically in Virginia that augurs a likely Democratic win. This is a state whose politics is multi-hued now. Historically, the tension had been black-white, but we have larger and fast-growing Asian and Latino populations, particularly in the northern part of the state. Mm-hmm. That would be just outside of Washington, D.C. And Virginia is unlike most states in that it has an election every year. In presidential years, turnouts peak. That tends to favor the Democrats.
Right. Now, also, your paper made some news, is that you endorsed Gary Johnson for president?
I didn't endorse him. The editorial pages did.
Yes.
And not long
what,
after
what prompted
Governor,
that?
Not long after Governor Johnson this week bollocks that question about Aleppo, the editorial page was hit with letters, comments, and phone calls questioning the judgment of its selection. I think it's safe to say that the editorial page of my newspaper tends to break center-right. It is not keen on Mr. Trump nor Mrs. Clinton, and this seemed to be a, shall we say, logical default and one that was certain to generate a good deal of conversation.
Now, your governor is a very close friend of the Clinton family. Terry McAuliffe used to be the head of the DNC, and he is going through some legal issues at the moment. What's his problem?
The Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Justice Department, is looking into his income over the past few years, wondering if he may have represented, at least as a private citizen, a foreign government, and would that have put him at cross purposes with laws that require individuals who do any lobbying or advocacy in behalf of foreign states to register with the federal government. One would note that this is a statute that would apparently apply to Mr. Manafort, Paul Manafort, the now former campaign director for the Trump effort.
And your former governor, also who was sentenced to prison, there was a review of his case. And when is he getting out?
Bob McDonald was convicted of corruption 2 years ago this month. That sentence, of course, that conviction rather was overturned by the Supreme Court in June. Mm-hmm. And this past week, the Justice Department indicated that it would not prosecute the former governor anew. During his appeals, which ran about 2 years, Governor McDonald did not serve a single day in jail. He remained free throughout those appeals, and he was sentenced to 2 years in prison.
Okay, and one last political question. Governor McAuliffe got some flack late last year when he announced that that ex-offenders or released prisoners would be able to vote in the state or the Commonwealth of Virginia. Is that now the law in the Commonwealth, or is that still being adjudicated in courts?
Under the Virginia Constitution, it is the governor's responsibility, more to the point, the governor's prerogative to reinstate the voting and civil rights of felons. In April, this past April, Governor McAuliffe announced that he would be restoring en masse the voting and civil rights of more than 200,000 violent and nonviolent felons. He was taken to court, the state Supreme Court, by the Republican leadership of the General Assembly, and the Supreme Court said that the governor certainly had absolute power to reinstate rights, but that he had to do it on a case-by-case basis, which is what he says he is doing. The Republican leadership is not terribly sure of that, has gone back to the Supreme Court asking it to review the governor's conduct, and it is determined that he is not complying with the court's guidelines to rule the governor in contempt.
Okay. Jeff, on that note, we are out of time. I want to thank you very much, Jeff Shapiro. He is a political columnist for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, offering the assessment tonight that Hillary Clinton has Virginia in the bag, and most people have thought that when she picked Tim Kaine. We thank you very much for being with us this evening. Jeannie Ives, thank you very much. Chris Roebling, thank you very much. Scott Hibbard, thank you very much. Congressman Schakowsky, always nice to have you back. Hope you do this show more often. You're a great guest. Our thanks to this program for this evening for Fritz Goldman and Dan Dorfman and Colin Bobbitt. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling's now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Saturdays at 4:30 and Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.